welcome to the Watershed Investigations podcast with me, Rachel Salvage.
And me, Liana Hosea.
In this episode, we're examining sacrifice zones. The phrase sacrifice zone originated in the Cold War era when it was used to describe areas made pretty much uninhabitable by nuclear experiments conducted by the United States, USSR, France and the UK. But now sacrifice zones are described by the UN High Commission for Human Rights as places where people suffer devastating physical and mental health consequences and human rights violations as a result of living in pollution hotspots. Greenpeace now describes them as geographical areas which are knowingly destroyed in the name of power and in the name of profit.
We're joined now by Cata Alonso. Cata lives in the village next to Quintero in Chile, which has been classified as a sacrifice zone because of the amount of pollution in the heavily industrialized area. Cata is an activist who runs the group Women of the Sacrifice Zone. Cata's daughter will be translating for us. Thank you both for joining us. Can you tell us a bit about Quintero, the area you live in, and describe to us what it's like to live there right now?
Esta es una bahía que tiene dos comunas.
This is a bay that has two communities. Quintero is one, and Puchuncaví is the one in front of it. We have 8 kilometers of coast that it's in between the two communities, that we have this big industrial park. When I was a kid also, all the community lived by the sea, you know? There were fishermen and farmers. Now it's not possible. We used to live from the tourism also. We had like a big lagoon that now it's full of ashes, and instead of the birds coming in, it's just ashes. There's an ancient culture called Vato, the native Indians from the zone. So there is also an archaeological site in the zone. We're not allowed to get in anymore.
What are the kind of health issues that you and your community are facing?
Los mayores problemas de salud lo tienen nuestros niños.
All the health problems that most of the community has have developed from the child, from the birth of the mothers.
When you give birth, the child is unwell when he's born.
Exactly. 1 of 4 kids in the schools, it's in a special program. They have learning disabilities, a lot of Down syndrome and autism, and they're not good formation in the bones, cancer also.
Has it been possible to link the illnesses directly to the pollution?
Yeah, our region has the most high standards of cancer in the country.
This is from your knowledge on the ground, or there's also been scientific studies about it?
There are scientific studies from the universities and also from the government that soil, sea, and air is contaminated.
And I was reading that in 2018, you had a particularly bad disaster. There was a chemical leak that sent some 1,700 people to a hospital. Were you caught up in that? Do you know people who were?
Es solo la cifra del hospital de Quintero.
That's only the amount of people from Quintero side. So it's more people
which were intoxicated
in that time. But if you go to the zone, and there are some days that your head itches, you know, your hands start to sleep, your legs start to like get lazy.
Y sangra la nariz.
And you also bleed the nose.
It sounds horrific on an everyday basis, but can you tell us also about this sort of acute disaster as well? What happened then?
Mucho mayor. Caíamos como mosca.
There were 3 or 4 days that everybody was feeling sick and getting in the ground like flies, you know. All the kids were like vomiting and feeling so bad. Most of the mothers started to ask to close the enterprises. They took out the militaries and just contained the people in there. And didn't give an answer or help for the people.
No help from the authorities, no help from the companies themselves, no help from anywhere?
No, they didn't have any answer from the government or the industries. At that time at the UN, they exposed what they were living. The recommendations are the same that Musos Area, my mom, are asking, to close industries and make it like improvement. But it hasn't still happened.
And how long have those industries been there? How long has it been an industrial place rather than, as you say, farming and fishing?
At the beginning, when I was little, for example, it only existed one, the NAMI, the National Enterprise. And then from the 64 to the 80s, they enlarged the park. And from the 80s to now, they have 20. Our main worry is that someday we will explode.
So the water, your drinking water, it comes from the sea then, rather than groundwater or surface water?
In the zone, the people that make their holes in the ground to take out the groundwater, it's contaminated, so nobody can drink it anymore. So what we do is we have to buy the water for the zone.
And have any of these companies done anything to try to improve their processes?
Alguna mejora ha habido, pero muy pocas.
There's been some improvement, but not enough.
So what is the current government doing? You've had some so-called progressive governments there. So what changes are they making?
What they're doing and working on, it's an a prevention plan for the zone instead of a reconstruction plan. And it should start to function now. But last year, we still had 2,000 people, kids, intoxicated.
Taken to hospital intoxicated, or can you explain that a bit?
It's not like a hospital as you're thinking. It's like a very primitive hospital. What they gave you is not much. They only give you painkiller and that's it.
And I assume you don't have cancer screening. And what about the cancer healthcare?
Mira, aquí es terrible porque al gobierno le salió.
Pollution, it's always coming into your body like step by step. So you don't feel it at the beginning. And when you realize that you're sick, you have to travel to Viña del Mar, which is the big city, to get another hospital there. Most of the people that we know, they diagnose the cancer, and then you last 3 months and then you're done. The major problem that we had to get into this point is that each and every government has increased the park. So what we are asking is to stop the park and the quantity of pollution and dangerous material in the zone, because we don't know what we breathe. We know it's wrong, but we don't know what contaminators are, actually. The problem is that that park gives a lot of economy to the country, and there's no like political will to make it work with the people that still lives there.
What else do you hope might happen then? You know, would you like to be relocated? Do you want remediation and cleanup?
They went to the Supreme Court and they won it because of the massive intoxications. They settled 15 steps for the industries to make a healthy living for the environmental. Fabrics that are not on the standards, they have to close or go. But the thing is that it hasn't happened.
Porque así está demostrado.
So you can't relocate.
If the state is still add more industries, we are proposing a change of location, but it has to be voluntary.
Politica.
That's not happening.
Ya tenía.
The thing is that the government doesn't have a majority in the parliament, so the opposition will never say yes to this request because it's the wealthy part.
Y además ha tenido que.
All the country prioritizes the wealth of the country and the economics instead of the human rights.
So those 15 boundaries that you talked about as a result of the legal case, is that industry has to make improvements by a certain year, by a certain time, and is that reducing emissions by a certain time? Is it those kind of boundaries or is it something else?
That's the big problem that we have. They don't have like a timing to make the measures. They're just working to say that it's done, but it's not happening in the real life. The first measurement is to stop the park and to see what is contaminating. If you don't do that first measurement, it's hard to go to the other steps. So that's the first one that they haven't done.
They need to do a full investigation of what the contamination is, and it hasn't happened.
Yes. If we don't know what it is, it's never going to stop to be a sacrifice zone.
That was Cata Alonso from Chile and her daughter, who wished to remain anonymous. Theirs is, of course, not the only community to find themselves living next door to heavily polluting and hazardous facilities. David Boy, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and the Environment, and also Associate Professor at the University of British Columbia, has become an expert on these sacrifice zones.
I first of all have to say that this whole phrase, sacrifice zones, is really a horrible phrase, right? These are some of the worst places on Earth for human beings to live. And I think it's terrific that you're shining a spotlight on this. And certainly in my 6 years as the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and the Environment, this is one of the most disturbing issues that I've come across. A woman from Chile's National Human Rights Institution said that Chile has a number of these sacrifice zones where profits and private interests have been prioritized over public health, human rights, and the environment. I was so struck by that phrase that I decided to do a special report on sacrifice zones, which are clearly fundamentally incompatible with the human right to live in a clean, healthy, and sustainable environment.
You know, we know these zones can be found all over the world, but I was wondering, is it possible to get an idea of scale? Do we know how many there are and other concentrations in particular areas of the world?
I don't think we have good data on how many there are, in part because there's not a standard definition that we can use that's, you know, widely accepted. But the reality is that sacrifice zones exist in almost every country in the world. Wherever there's a major industrial complex, wherever there's an oil refinery or petrochemical plant, there are people living nearby and often living in conditions that are hard to imagine. I'm from Canada, and I was absolutely stunned to visit an indigenous community called Amjinong, which is in the province of Ontario. Amjinong's community is surrounded by literally 25 major industrial facilities, including oil refineries, petrochemical plants, plastic manufacturing facilities. I spent half a day in that community and came away with the worst headache of my life. People there are subject to warnings where they have air raid sirens, the kind of sirens that were used in World War II to warn people about incoming bombings. In Amjinong, the air raid sirens go off when there's been a chemical release, and people are told to stay inside with the doors and windows closed until they receive a text message that it's safe to leave. That's in Canada. I've also visited sacrifice zones in Chile, in Botswana, in Slovenia. I mean, they're all over the world.
That's horrendous. I can't imagine. And how effective is just closing doors and windows going to be to some of these pollutants?
No, I mean, it's ineffective. I mean, people are living in the midst of horrific air, water, and soil pollution. The air they breathe, the water they drink, the food they eat are all contaminated with toxic substances that have a direct impact on their physical and mental well-being. That is absolutely crystal clear. The scientific evidence is irrefutable.
Is that community in Canada Sarnia?
Yes, it's an indigenous community called Amjinong, which is located just on the outskirts of a city called Sarnia.
Because I heard that they actually have more girls born now, disproportionate to boys.
Yeah, there was a scientific study published a few years ago that found a disproportionate number of girls being born and attributed that to some of the endocrine-disrupting chemicals found in the air, water, and soil in the Sarnia region. And people living in sacrifice zones, they have shorter life expectancies, higher levels of respiratory illness, higher levels of cancer, higher levels of heart disease, higher levels of mental illness. I mean, every adverse health impact that you can imagine is being imposed upon the people in these terrible conditions.
Has it been possible to draw a straight line of causation from the pollution to a particular polluter, or is it because of the complexes you couldn't say where it's coming from? I mean, has there been a case where it's been clear-cut and people have been able to get compensation?
We've just had a stunning court decision from the Inter-American Court of Human Rights dealing with a sacrifice zone in Peru called the community of La Oroya. And the court found that the government of Peru had systematically violated the right to a healthy environment and the right to health and the rights of the child by failing to prevent pollution from a major metallurgical complex that produced toxic air, polluted the rivers, and most disturbingly, poisoned generations of children with lead, which causes irreversible developmental damage. But the court issued a comprehensive order requiring the government to clean up the area, provide medical treatment to those affected, and provide financial compensation for their material losses and their pain and suffering. So that is one crystal clear example of how you can use your right to a healthy environment to achieve accountability. It took 20 years, which is a long time for justice, but in the end, environmental justice was delivered for the people of La Oroya, Peru.
Yes, and I know that the Navajo Nation in New Mexico and Arizona have also brought their case of uranium contamination to the Inter-American Court to see if there will be a ruling, if they'll be allowed to have a case on that. And in the US, it has been shown, thanks to a long history of racial segregation with hazardous and polluting facilities and toxic waste dumps disproportionately located in or close to African American, Indigenous American and Latin American low-income communities. I mean, and it's similar in South Africa with its apartheid legacy. So do you think there's still this overriding racism when it comes to sacrifice zones, and how much is that part of the design? Or how much does this underpin the idea that certain people can be sacrificed?
Yeah, I think that racism is still a problem. Colonialism is still a problem. Sexism is still a problem because, you know, many of these chemicals we're talking about have disproportionate impacts on women and girls. You're absolutely right that the impact on communities of color is huge. You know, I mentioned the indigenous community in Canada. If you look at the area of Louisiana known as Cancer Alley, you find a similar conglomeration of these absolutely horrific industrial enterprises and a clear link between the emissions of those businesses and elevated cancer risks in those communities. So the science is crystal clear that living in a sacrifice zone is bad for your health.
And of course, those communities in Louisiana are majority African-American communities. And some people would say, you know, why don't those people just move away from that place? But, you know, of course, that's not obviously always possible financially. People get attached to their homes. But can you unpick that a bit more? And is that something that you've heard in your line of work?
It's a total illusion to say these people should just move somewhere else, because the reality is, in a place like Cancer Alley, real estate prices are so suppressed by the horrific environmental conditions that you couldn't go anywhere else. You simply can't afford to go somewhere else. So it's not a viable option for people. And many of those families have been there for decades, if not centuries. So they have deep roots in the community and they're not interested in going somewhere else.
If we look at environmental racism, can we scale up this view and look globally then in terms of which countries are perhaps dealing with the worst environmental injustices in terms of pollution or fossil fuel production and having to deal with waste? Can you see environmental racism on a global level?
Yeah, absolutely. Because if we think about things like supply chains, I mean, people who are drinking Coca-Cola or Pepsi are consuming sugar that's produced in some cases by basically slave labor in India, where people are working in absolutely horrific working conditions. That's part of the problem with our global economy, is that it's premised on the exploitation of people and nature, people who are often out of sight, out of mind. And so obviously there are systemic changes that need to be made that should simultaneously address racism, gender equality, and climate and environmental injustice. If we come at it from a human rights-based perspective, the solution should tackle all of those societal challenges simultaneously.
Is this an issue that you have seen in the UK at all? And is there a way that we can examine the problem here? I can think of a few complexes that I wouldn't like to live alongside.
Yeah, I think there are definitely industrial facilities in the UK that I wouldn't want to live nearby, but I'll give you a different type of example from the UK. So along my journey, I met an extraordinary woman by the name of Rosamond Kissy DeBras, who lost her beautiful daughter, Ella, at the age of 9 because of air pollution in London. And their family lived in a very poor part of London where air quality is notoriously bad, largely because of motor vehicle emissions. And so this is another type of sacrifice zone where people who are poor, people of color, tend to be in areas where governments don't mind running big roads and heavy trucks and that sort of pollution-producing traffic, which they would never run through a wealthy, leafy, suburban neighborhood. And so Ella's case, the case of this beautiful 9-year-old British girl, she developed asthma at a young age, and then she was hospitalized 27 times before finally She was taken to hospital and couldn't be revived. And scientists later linked each of those 27 hospitalizations with spikes in air pollution in the community where she lived in London, England. A subsequent coroner's inquest into her death for the first time in the world found that a person's death was directly caused by air pollution. And that just is a heartbreaking story of how basically you have created a sacrifice zone within the city of London where the air pollution is so terrible that it can kill a nine-year-old child.
That's been a big story here in the UK. Would you classify places where there is repeated flooding and communities, they get washed out of their homes on a semi-regular basis, would that classify as a sacrifice zone?
Flooding, of course, is getting worse because of the climate crisis, so you may be able to draw a connection between the exacerbated frequency and severity of flooding to the climate crisis, in which case I think you are talking about a certain category of sacrifice zones that we're seeing. The one thing I would say, in every one of these communities that I've visited, there are extraordinarily brave and courageous people who are fighting for their right to a clean, healthy, and sustainable environment, who are organizing, who are petitioning the government, who are putting together these lawsuits, who are challenging these businesses. I think that there is strength in numbers, and there's also strength in supporting global organizations like Greenpeace that are joining forces with these people on the front lines to bring about solutions, to bring about a just and sustainable future for everyone, where it doesn't matter what your gender is, what the color of your skin, where you live, everyone, everywhere has the right to a healthy environment, and we need to make that a reality for people.
Professor Boyd, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Leanne.
In response to allegations of sugar workers being exploited, as first reported by the New York Times, Coca-Cola has said on their website that they condemn abuse in any form within our supply chain and take these reports very seriously. We are committed to respecting human rights wherever we do business and have prioritized addressing these issues in our global operations and supply chains. PepsiCo was quoted in the New York Times investigation saying that the description of the working conditions of sugarcane cutters in Maharashtra is deeply concerning. We will engage with our franchise partners to conduct an assessment to undertake the sugarcane cutter working conditions and any actions that may need to be taken. Thank you for joining us on this Watershed Investigations podcast.